If I said something about your mother, how would you react? That's the question we're going to deal with here today, among other things, on Fantasy Pick and Roll, your exclusive basketball podcast on CBSSports.com. I'm Jamie Eisenberg. Joining me is Sergio Gonzalez, and we are breaking down the NBA playoffs and also taking a look at the fantasy basketball world where Sergio has no peers, the Fantasy Basketball Writer of the Year, Sergio Gonzalez. Sergio, if I walked up to your mother and said that you're a thug, how would you react?
Well, I can't even say that on the air. I'm gonna say that Mark Cuban, he's a class act. He's in a class by himself. Every single time that he does something, he keeps shocking people. That's it.
We're talking about Mark Cuban walked up to Kenyon Martin's mother and had a little exchange where he called her he said that your son is a thug and you raised a thug.
He may have said punk. He says
punk, whatever it is. I like what he's trying to do, though, to make up for it by either giving his parents or his mother his suite if there is a game six, or giving them a suite of their choice if they don't like his suite in Dallas. So at least he's trying to make up for it. I generally find in the exchanges that I've had to deal with Mark Cuban that he's a good guy. But as you said, sometimes he tends to open mouth, insert foot, and lets his emotions get the best of him. But we might not be dealing with Mr. Cuban for much longer, even though Dallas does win game four. They have not played particularly well throughout the course of this series. Probably should have won game three, however.
Questionable call. If
they were allowed to get that foul call there at the end. So we could be looking at a potential 2-2 series going into game five. Right now it's 3-1. I'd be very shocked if Dallas comes out of Denver with a victory. And Denver could be the second team getting to the conference finals. What have you seen so far in this series since the last time we talked, which was last week, and we were sort of previewing the second round? I did not expect it to be this quick. I thought Dallas would put up a little bit more of a fight, but Denver's on a roll. I know you were definitely very behind the Denver Nuggets, and they're not letting you down.
Yeah. What I think we've seen with Dallas is that Dirk Nowitzki, he's taken a lot of flack over the years for not being the kind of player that can put a team on his shoulders.
Sure.
We saw that for sure in game four last night, when he basically willed that team to win. That team, they were behind in the fourth quarter. It didn't look good. Carmelo Anthony was willing in his own right. He was willing the Nuggets pass to close the series. And Dirk just took it upon himself with Josh Howard's clearly not himself. Jason Kidd, his best days are behind him. It was a Dirk Nowitzki show, and I think that's going to go a long way for a player who a lot of his game is based on self-confidence. And I think going into next year, I think that's going to help him. We all know that they're not going to beat the Nuggets, but this knowing that he can do this, I think it's going to go a long way in his development.
This is something we talked about last week, that if you were to say to the Dallas Mavericks, based on the regular season that they had with a new coach in Rick Carlisle, with an aging Jason Kidd, with Josh Howard dealing with all of his injuries, Jason Terry breaking his hand during the year and still winning the Sixth Man Award, and Dirk coming off a very questionable season a year ago where, you know, he still put up his numbers, but he wasn't exactly taking them very far. They missed the playoffs. So if you were to say to the Dallas Mavericks, you win a playoff series in the first round as a sixth seed, you beat San Antonio, and then let's say you take Denver to five games in the second round. Successful season or disappointment?
I think even Mark Cuban would sign on the dotted line for that right now.
I don't think he would. I think he would probably call his teams a bunch of thugs or something more derogatory. To me, it's been a successful season for Dallas, a successful playoff run, because, again, Josh Howard needs ankle surgery. He hasn't been himself for the most part all season.
He's not explosive at all.
Yeah, very gritty performance for him to play the way he has. Jason Terry, I think, has finally developed into being comfortable as the sixth man, because he wasn't thrilled with the role originally when it, you know, was sort of thrust upon him toward the end of his tenure in Atlanta and then coming to Dallas. And then you see, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head that Dirk can use this type of play going into next year, which ironically enough will be a contract year for him next year, because he's one of those big prize free agent guys that will be joining LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh heading into the offseason of 2010. So this sets up very nicely for him if he can get one more good game or maybe a couple more games out of this playoff series. But I think as you saw and as we've talked about, which we'll get into with Denver probably at a later time with the podcast, looking at the Nuggets, because I think they're clearly headed to round three, to the Western Conference Finals. The other playoff series that we've been looking at has been, I think, the most fun, at least certainly for the Western Conference, but been the most fun because of what's taken place in Houston. The series is tied going into Game 5, 2-2. Just to give you a little time frame of when we're recording this. The Lakers, for the most part, I think they're just going through the motions a little bit, haven't played up to the level I think that they have, and this has been a tough matchup for them. You know, Houston is one of those teams, and they're doing it now in two different ways, because they started the series with Yao Ming being a matchup problem for them, even though they have Paul Gasol and Andrew Bynum. Andrew Bynum has been totally non-existent this entire postseason.
Agreed.
But now Yao Ming breaks his foot, is out for the rest of the playoffs, is going to be questionable to start next year, at least during training camp. And now you're seeing the Rockets without Yao Ming, without Tracy McGrady. If you were to say, again, we'll talk about this with same thing with Dallas Mavericks. If you were to say to a Houston Rockets fan, you'll be tied 2-2 without Tracy McGrady for the entire playoffs and for most of the regular season. And now without Yao Ming, at least coming into game four, you saw a resurgent Houston Rockets team. I think they're still going to take this maybe six or seven games. Well, definitely six, but maybe seven games. Aaron Brooks is really taking the next level of his game. You can say that they lose their best post threat, but they still have a very good post presence in Luis Scola.
Absolutely.
Ron Artest is showing why everybody for years has said, if this guy can only get his head on straight, he'd be one of the best talents in the NBA, and he's showing that. And then you're getting mix-and-match performances from guys like Carl Andrew, from Shane Battier, from Kyle Lowry, from Chuck Hayes, you know, from Von Wafer. You know, these guys are stepping up and playing a role. There is no one, I think, on the Rockets team, maybe outside of Ron Artest, that would start for the Lakers. I don't think, if you look at their five and the Rockets five. And now Lamar Odom is a little bit banged up. So where do you see this series going a little bit, Sergio?
Well, I think we talked about it a little bit last week, and in that these two teams are playing into the hands of the Denver Nuggets, where they're going to beat each other up for six. You said this could go seven games. You agree this could go seven games?
Well, Houston's very good at home. So I think if I had to, you know, handicap it, I'd say the Lakers win game five, the Rockets win game six, and the Lakers win game seven at home.
So they're dropping like flies. Lamar Odom's banged up. Kobe Bryant's not 100%. I don't think what we've seen of him this series. He had a sore throat going in. He just doesn't look like himself.
I don't know if he doesn't look like himself. I mean, let's give the Rockets credit. They have two of the best perimeter defenders
sure.
in the league. And we knew Kobe's going to get his points, mm-hmm. but is he going to do it in 15 to 20 shots, or is he going to do it to 25 to 35
right.
shots? And that's what we're seeing, and that's what we sort of expected, because they're going to make him take tough shots, and he's not going to stop shooting. So the less you're getting from guys like Odom and from Bynum, and Derek Fisher was suspended for a stupid elbow throw against Luis Scola. So without these complementary players stepping up to the level that we know that they're capable of, that's only going to force Kobe and even, you know, a step further, Gasol, to take their games to a higher level and in turn force up a little bit more shots.
I do think what this series is doing is it's taking some of the luster off of the Lakers' mystique that they had coming into the playoffs, that they're just going to steamroll through the playoffs, the Western Conference, and it was the inevitable Cleveland Cavaliers-Los Angeles Lakers matchup. I don't think that's such a sure thing anymore. I think that the Rockets are exposing them in terms of how to attack the team, and they're also beating them up. So if they do somehow manage to get by the Rockets, they're going to have a tough time getting by a Nuggets team that just seems to keep, I know they lost
game four
against the Mavericks, but they just seem to get better, and they're a deep team with a lot of weapons that can match up with the Lakers, especially up front, where I don't think Pau Gasol and especially Bynum not being 100% can match up with Chris Anderson and Nene the way they're playing right now. I know it doesn't sound right going into what you would have thought going into the season or going into next season. The way they're playing right now, I think the Nuggets can take the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be too much of a shock at this point, although I think if the Lakers get to the Western Conference Finals, which I think we both agree that they will,
yeah,
that's where I think the talent level sort of evens itself out. Houston, again, as much as they're playing above their heads, they're a matchup nightmare for the Lakers mm-hmm. because of Artest, because of Battier, and because prior to the injury, Yao Ming, because he can negate essentially Bynum and Gasol by his play alone. I don't know if Denver has the type of perimeter defenders. I mean, they're going to have to throw Dante Jones, J.R. Smith, you know, these type of players. You know, Carmelo really can't stay with Kobe, so they're not going to have to. They're not going to have the defensive presence to contain Bryant.
But they might. You don't think they'd put Chauncey on Kobe a little bit?
No, he's not fast enough, and Kobe will shoot over the top of him. I mean, you know, Chauncey's not exactly the most athletic guy. I think he has one dunk this season. You know, that's a definition of a player's athleticism. But, you know, Chauncey's more used to being the bully of point guards because he's bigger, stronger than a lot of those guys. He's not necessarily suited to guard, you know, two guards. And even going back to his Pistons days when they had that final series where they swept the Lakers, or at least took them to five, I don't exactly remember which one it was, with Karl Malone and Gary Payton when they struggled there. But I think you look at it was more Tayshaun Prince, a bigger guard, you know, a bigger forward playing Kobe. Same thing with this Rocket series where Battier and Artest, they're two totally different type of defenders, but they're able to sort of force Kobe into a lot of bad, tough shots where his greatness sort of has to take over, where he makes them and gets to the foul line. So it will be a great final series. However, it starts to shake out. And again, we'll get into that a little bit later as we move along with our podcast here. But going to the Eastern Conference, you know, it's an interesting sort of scenario because everybody sort of has penciled in with Kevin Garnett's injury, Cleveland Lakers for the finals. The Lakers, I think, figured that that's the case, that they're just going to glide through the postseason, you know, with the 1-8 matchup and then the 1-4 or 1-5, and then sort of getting, you know, with home court throughout the Western Conference. They sort of have taken this, we could just show up, put the ball in the court, we're better than everybody else, which in most cases they are. Cleveland not only is better than most teams that they face, especially in the playoffs so far, as evidenced by two sweeps, but they're sort of not letting anything happen to chance. They're not saying we can go here and go there and maybe win here and maybe win there. They're just putting their foot on the throat of everybody that they're facing. LeBron James is living up to all the hype that comes along with being the MVP and continuing his successful regular season well into the postseason. And these complimentary players are short as whatever expletive you want to put there, not backing down from the challenge of being the number one seed in the East and the number one seed in the entire playoffs. You know, Mo Williams is rising to the occasion of his deepest playoff run. Zdrunas Ilgauskas, Anderson Varejao, Joe Smith looks rejuvenated. Delonte West is really playing above his skill level. They're getting good play from Wally Szczerbiak off the bench. These guys are just really playing at a different level right now, and it's evidenced by what they did to the Pistons and now what they did to the Hawks.
Absolutely, and I think something that goes underrated in these scenarios is there another team that's currently in these playoffs that has more fun than the Cleveland Cavaliers? In terms of chemistry, I don't think there's a team that has even close to the type of chemistry that they have right now. But I do think that they're too good right now. And that could be something that comes into play in these next couple of series. They haven't really been tested yet.
Absolutely.
And in the next round, they're going to either Orlando or Boston. Are they ready to go 6 or 7? Because it's going to take 6 or 7 to beat that team. And
sure.
I'm not sure if we just don't know because Cleveland hasn't had to do that yet. And I'm not sure. Do you, Jamie, do you think that this team has those kind of intangibles to go 6 or 7 with a Boston or an Orlando right now?
I do, from the standpoint of a couple things. First of all, going back to your point about the Denver Nuggets facing the Lakers and Rockets, those two teams are beating each other up in terms of Boston and Orlando. So especially Boston now losing potentially or at least having Kendrick Perkins hurt along with Leon Poe and obviously Kevin Garnett, you know, if in fact Garnett does miss the rest of the playoff run. So they're banged up and they don't have exactly their full complement of horses to go against a team like Cleveland. The second thing is Cleveland, for as young as they may be and as inexperienced as some of the complimentary guys are, you're still talking about a team that's 2 years removed from an NBA Finals appearance against San Antonio. They did go 7 games with Boston last year, losing the Eastern Conference semifinals to the Celtics as a 4 seed. So they know what it takes to sort of have that mental will. And LeBron James, you know, it's interesting. I heard this point last night on the telecast. He took a hard foul to the face. I believe it was Pachulia smacked him across the face. His headband fell off. And they say, you know, they said LeBron doesn't get rattled. You know, he doesn't sort of turn around and try and get in somebody's face. You know, he realizes it's playoffs. You're going to get hard fouls. And that sort of speaks not only to his mental toughness and sort of what he's made of as a young player. You know, I know he's not exactly a kid anymore. He's not 18 years old coming out of high school. But it also speaks to, you know, what Mike Brown has established. And that goes back to your chemistry point. This team is sort of put themselves on a mission to say, we may not win an NBA title this year, although I'd be surprised if they didn't at this point. But we are going to get there. And we're going to sort of steamroll the teams that we need to steamroll. And when it comes time to be tested, listen, they had the best home record in the NBA this year. They've won on the road. They've faced Houston, Boston, and Orlando. And again, these two teams don't really match up well with Cleveland because there's no one who can defend LeBron. And the way that they're playing at this point, they've done something that's so simple yet has been so difficult for other teams to match up with because you can't defend the pick and roll when it's LeBron holding the ball and either Mo Williams or Delonte West setting the pick. It does such nightmare problems. I watched it the two games against the Heat where they would sit there and LeBron's holding the ball. One of the two smaller guards sets a pick, so obviously he's setting a pick on a small forward. And then you have either LeBron dealing with a point guard where he's either going to shoot over the top of him or back him down and get a layup. Or you have he kicks it out to one of the guards who are two, you know, obviously Mo Williams is one of the best, but, you know, Delonte West is a capable three-point shooter. These two guys just are unconscious from behind the line. So they've done it with Atlanta, you know, where you see LeBron being matched up with Ronald Murray and Mike Bibby. I mean, there's no chance. There's absolutely no chance for those guys to defend those players. So I just think Cleveland now they're going to be rested. They haven't been tested in the first round. They now have them tested in the second round. And you have these two teams that are going to continue to beat each other up because I think we could both agree that series is going seven.
Yeah, I think we have almost parallels in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference where the Nuggets are waiting for the other two teams to beat up on each other just the same way that the Cavs are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of LeBron and what he can do with that team, among the elite scorers in the league, I don't think anybody is as unselfish as LeBron.
You're 100% right.
It's almost earlier in his career it was almost a negative trait that he had that mm-hmm. he would be
pass
too willing
shots,
to pass
sure.
up the game winning yep. shot. But I think that's emerged into now where he's comfortable with the players that he has around him. He makes and I think it helps in making him better. And it's something fantasy wise that I think makes him the top by far fantasy option because nobody else is going to get you that combination of points, assists, and rebounds. I mean, the guy averages 37-7.
Yeah,
nobody else is. Kobe's not going to. Ever,
no, the right. closest we saw was this year, I think, with Dwayne Wade when he was 35
right.
and 5, you
right.
know, or 36-6, whatever it came out to, mm-hmm. but not to the same level of LeBron because he doesn't rebound as well as LeBron does.
Right.
He may pass the ball as well, but doesn't share the ball as much because of his supporting cast. So,
but can you think around the league among the elite scorers, anybody else that's
willing to
give up the ball?
There's no question he's by far the best. I mean, you know, Chris Paul's not the scorer that he is. Certainly distributes the ball better, but that's more of his role. You know, Tracy McGrady's not going to get back to that level again. Vince Carter's not that well of a rebounder or doesn't share the ball as much.
And LeBron, you know, LeBron
Dirk is not
genuinely
a passer.
Right. He genuinely looks like he's having fun when other people on his team are stepping up. You see him on the bench sometimes having a good time, maybe too much fun on the bench when other players on his team are making plays. But he seems to enjoy when he can get other people involved.
Yeah, and it speaks volumes to where this team has come from, you know, from being a 4 or 5 seed the last couple of years to the best team in the NBA, that he finally has a guy that can score, you know, without him creating shots for someone else. I mean, Mo Williams is certainly benefiting from playing with LeBron, but if, in fact, he had to go get a bucket, he could go get a bucket.
Right.
Ilgauskas is healthy after the ankle problems earlier this year. Varejao's offensive game has improved just a little bit, you know, enough that he
enough.
Can, you know,
right.
put the ball back in the basket if he gets a rebound. And then Delonte West, you know, I think he's a very unsung player on this team, and he's really stepped up. You know, they came over in the trade last year, him and Serbiak, and after a full year of being comfortable playing that role, you know, it's interesting because there's no true point guard on this team. Mo Williams is the closest to it, but LeBron handles the ball. West would probably be a point guard in any other team. He's the two guard, and Mo Williams fits the point guard role. But, you know, it like I said, they're just a matchup nightmare. And then when they go small, where LeBron is playing the four, there's no power forward in the league that could keep up with him. So, you know, he's probably the five fastest guys in the league. He's certainly one of the five most athletic guys in the league. And his offensive ability, his playmaking ability, his rebounding ability puts him among the league leaders in all categories. So, there's a reason he's the MVP. There's a reason he was second in defensive MVP voting. He's just absolutely an all around tremendous talent. And while we're talking awards, we should mention well deserved on Danny Granger's part to be the most improved player this year.
Yeah, I know. You were talking when my fantasy awards came out that you thought Rajon Rondo was a player that should have been up in there in the battling. I didn't actually see the battling for the NBA version. Mm-hmm. Was Rajon? He was one of the candidates, right?
Let's look it up.
Yeah. Well, in any case, Rajon Rondo is a player that I do agree. It was a bit of oversight on my part not to put him in the fantasy version of this. But Rajon Rondo, what he's done in the playoffs with the triple doubles and everything like that. Next year, where do you see him going in fantasy drafts?
You know, I doing the updates the last couple weeks, it's been pretty impressive to see how he's done. You know, you mentioned the triple doubles. I sort of look at it two different ways because we saw, I believe it was either earlier this year or last year, when Kevin Garnett got hurt, we saw Rondo's rebound totals just skyrocket. You know, they really spiked when Garnett was out, and I think we're seeing that throughout the playoffs, that he's a very good rebounding, especially for a point guard, but he's a very good rebounding guard. He's, you know, it's interesting their offense has changed because instead of just throwing the ball into the post to KG, and then he sort of creates, because you talk about unselfish players, you know, Garnett's he's among the most unselfish post players in the league. So you've seen sort of Rondo with the ball in his hands a lot more pick and roll. They're another team that's sort of going to the small pick and roll with, you know, Pierce setting picks or even Ray Allen setting picks. And that's allowed Rondo's assist totals to spike. Now, I think his scoring is naturally going to improve. You know, his jump shot is improving. His range is getting better. And he's obviously having to sort of take the ball to the basket a little bit more. But I think, his totals this year, his stats across the board this year, made him a number two fantasy guard just by definition and where he fell. He's on the cusp of being a number one guy, and I think he's one of those players that you're not going to want to reach too high for, but when he lands in your lap in terms of round three, round four, if he's there in round five, it's a steal. You know, but I think the top four rounds, you know, you're not going to take him obviously in round one, or I think around two. Round two would be a little too high. Round three, I think, though, is where, depending on how your draft goes, if it's real guard heavy and then you need somebody to sort of plug in as your second guard, that's a great spot for him. Or if you go forward center in your first two picks, you know, maybe then you start to consider a guy like Rondo. But round four, I think, is where you start to consider it. And if he's there round five, it's a great pick.
I agree. I think what I'm kind of worried about with Rondo is, and this happens a lot, the playoff run that he's having, obviously it's what sticks in fantasy owners' minds.
Sure.
And then the next year, I'm going to take him in the first round because he had triple doubles in the playoffs. But I just want fantasy owners to understand is like what Jamie said. A lot of this has to do with Kevin Garnett not being there, so you're getting a lot of rebounds that you're probably not going to get next year when Garnett's healthy.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing to keep in mind is Ray Allen's going to be a year older, so we don't know exactly what, you know, how many minutes they're going to play. You know, we saw it a little bit this year. They scaled back the minutes for Pierce. They scaled back the minutes for Allen. You know, so that's going to help Rondo a little bit. And you got to figure an off season of continuing to work on his game. A lot of it will be determined by how far they go, and you know, if they can get past Orlando and then, you know, whatever happens against Cleveland. So we'll see sort of what happens with this team. But yeah, he's certainly improved his stock. You know, and let's just finish that playoff series there, and then we'll get to some of the other guys who have taken their game to the next level. But I want to touch on the Atlanta Hawks for a second, because you did a great story prior to the season about the Hawks being this year's Tampa Bay Devil Rays and sort of becoming that surprise team to go from, you know, Atlanta wasn't really out of nowhere, but they were, you know, a team that nobody thought could be a playoff or title contender, and they certainly managed to get to the second round. But you and I had, you know, brief discussion about what Atlanta needs to do for next season. I think they need to sort of, I don't think blow it up, but they need another playmaker or player of some sort, because Al Horford is not an offensive player. He's a good 10-10 guy, but he's never going to get you a bucket when you need it. Josh Smith is a head case. You know, he's arguably one of the most athletic players in the league, but he's not the type of player that wants to play in the... He's almost like a young Rasheed Wallace. He doesn't want to play in the post.
I like that.
He wants to shoot way too much.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize how good he can be if he sort of put his mind to it. And interestingly enough, doing the outlooks for this team for next year, his numbers have declined each of the past 2 years. So, his numbers were not as good this year as they were the last two years. So
he was a fantasy disappointment. I think we can all agree.
Yeah, but he still put up great stats, but not as good
just
as
not
I
where
think
he was
a lot
drafted
of people thought.
Right.
And then there's Joe Johnson, he's a player whose stats have declined each of the past 2 years. 25 points in 2006-07 to 21.7 points 07-08 to 21.3 points last year. And his assists and rebound totals have also declined. So you're looking at what Joe Johnson's able to do. great scorer, you know, going to be above 20 points, 21 points. Hopefully it turns around and goes in a different direction from a fantasy perspective. But he's not the type of player, I think, you give him the ball and say, go get me a shot. He's the type of player that has to dribble, 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 dribble. He's almost a big Allen Iverson. He has to sort of command the ball and hope the defense sort of sets up right. And whenever they put LeBron James on him in this playoff series, he couldn't do anything.
I do agree. I think in terms of what the Hawks need to do, I think they may have gone as far as they can go with Mike Woodson. I think we've seen this in the league elsewhere where they develop under one coach, then they hand them off to another coach with sure. a different culture shock, whatever it is, and then they can take the next step. I think the unique thing about the Hawks and what they're developing is that they aren't built around one player having to rely on a player to get a bucket, like you said, as Joe Johnson. I mean, every once in a while you do need a player that down the stretch, we need a bucket, who are you going to go to? Is Joe
Johnson. You know who that guy was for him in the playoffs?
Who?
Ronald Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
That's who it was, because he's the type of guy that can't get his own shot off.
Right.
Without, no matter the matchup problem.
And that's not going to work if you're thinking long-term in terms of
building. They do have a couple of unrestricted free agents, and I think that's the key spot for them, is that Bibby and Ronald Murray are both free agents this offseason.
Right.
I think point guards is the answer for them. Marvin Williams is also a nice player. You know, mm-hmm. he's a guy that went from basically not a three-point shooter at all. He hit 55 this year. I would like to see maybe a Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd, and I could see that. Yeah.
The guy does not need to create his own shot, mm-hmm. doesn't need the ball in his hands, will create for others.
But then who is the player that you're saying needs to, when you need a shot, 2 minutes?
But it's exactly what you said. They're a team that's not built on a guy that can get your own shot. You know, that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. But they don't have a guy that's going to create shots for other people.
They don't have that player that – they don't have a player that if the ball is in his hands under 2 minutes left, you're saying, oh, no. Oh, get the ball out of
No, I mean, Joe Johnson's not that player. You know, he's their best scorer. Josh Smith is not that player because you don't know what he's going to do when he gets the ball. Right. They don't have a playmaker. You know, right. Bibby's not necessarily a playmaking type of point guard. And Marvin Williams and Horford sort of have to play off of what everybody else does. So they need a point guard of some sort, in my opinion, to sort of get them to the next level, whether it's Woodson or not. But I would agree with you. A culture shock is also needed there. All right, let's look at Atlanta and Boston. I'm sorry, Orlando and Boston.
Yeah.
Big Baby hits the shot in game four to send them to game five.
That's not all he hit.
He hits a little kid as well. Keeps them alive, at least for a shot at making this a seven-game series and avoiding the dreaded 3-1 deficit. I'm still counting on Boston to win the series.
Oh, me too.
It's hard to look at Orlando. As good as they played at times, and again, they should have been up 3-1, I just don't see Boston losing this.
Well, they don't have what I think we've come to see from Boston the last couple of years, that championship instinct. Even in game one, where they took it in Boston, they were choking away a 25-point lead towards the end.
Yep.
They don't have that killer instinct, and we saw that in the Glenn Davis game. Mm-hmm. There's just something missing. I've said this before, and I think the NBA is, you go by steps. And I think that this is a step that Orlando is taking. They're going to maybe get Boston to game six or game seven. I think they're going to lose because Boston has that. Boston has that where they know how to close out games. We saw that in the Chicago series where they had to, every other game was they had to figure out a way to close it out. I think Orlando's not there yet. I think this year is going to be a learning process for them in terms of what do we need to do next year to figure out how to get that killer instinct. I don't know if they have a player that they can, that could just, Dwight Howard's awesome, but He's not there yet in terms of just being able to close out games. Sure. Half the time at the end of games, he can't even be on the floor because
His foul shooting has improved, especially right. in the playoffs.
But it's still pretty dreadful.
It's a little bit of a detriment. Right. Sure.
So Orlando's not there yet in terms of being able to close out games, and I think that's going to cost them in this series. And that's why Boston and Cleveland are going to be playing again this year in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, and I think the reason Boston or Orlando looks at the series and says we can take the next step is because Kevin Garnett is not there, and you know Leon sure. Poe is not there, and you know you look at Kendrick Perkins is now banged up. So if I'm the Orlando Magic, I'm just force feeding or Dwight Howard the ball and saying, you know, go get 20 and 20, and hopefully those shooters will open up a little bit. And
the other day, I mean, they did what they had to do. To the fact that Glenn Davis took that shot is because Orlando did what they were supposed to do. They made sure they were going to double up
Pierce.
And even Ray Allen before moving off the ball before the play started.
If you're Orlando, you absolutely are saying, yes, thank you, please take that
shot.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they did what they're supposed to do. But, I mean, that's the thing that these teams that have developed, like Boston and the Lakers and the Spurs over the years, where just about anybody can hit a big shot. They've got that killer instinct. It's an intangible that I don't think Orlando has yet.
I would agree. All right, let's get into a little fantasy stuff here. So we're looking at the playoffs here. You bring up Rajon Rondo as a guy that's improved his stock. We'll stay with Boston and Orlando. Anybody on the Orlando Magic who's taken their game up, down, sideways, you know, Dwight Howard is still the number one center. Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis, I think they're still the same. Courtney Lee, we haven't got a chance to really see because of the sinus problem. Orlando, to me, is really in the same boat that they were, so I think maybe we move on from there. Anybody else on Boston besides those three guys that we mentioned?
Well, what we're seeing with Boston is a little deceptive, like we mentioned with Rajon and Glenn Davis. Glenn Davis, he's a nice player, but next year when Kevin Garnett comes back, mm-hmm. he's not. Leon Powell's going to be back, and he's not going to be a relevant player. So with Boston, we're seeing
Poe's a free agent, but
Doc Rivers says he really wants to.
He would like to get him a contract, yes. But and he's not going to be ready for the start of the season anyway.
So. And Poe is minor. We're talking when Garnett comes back. Sure. Glenn Davis, he's not going to be a relevant fantasy player. I think with Boston, more of what we're seeing is deception in terms of fantasy. When they're healthy, you know what this team is. It's the big three, and we're getting more of Rajon Rondo developing into his own and Kendrick Perkins on the side. The team's not going to change once it's back to full strength, fantasy-wise.
Sure. I do think, though, Glenn Davis, depending on what happens with Poe and if, in fact, they do bring in somebody else, I think he's a guy that you could stick on the end of your bench that can be a 12-point score or 4 or 5 rebounds a game, you know, because they're going to go to a three-man rotation, you know, and Perkins is a guy that gets in foul trouble a ton.
Yes.
So, and listen, we still don't know the severity of Garnett's injury. You know, if in fact he doesn't come back at all in the playoffs, and we're sort of looking at this offseason saying
it keeps getting backed up.
Is there surgery required? Yeah. You know, then Glenn Davis could be a great sleeper this coming season. So I think we covered the Hawks a little bit. You know, I don't see anything. Pachulia's a free agent. Bibby's a free agent. Marvin Williams is a restricted free agent. There's no one I think that's really taken the next step in terms of, okay, this guy's gone from, you know, 2-1 or a 3-2.
But what do we do with Josh Smith? It depends. He's a category-based player. In rotisserie, he's kind of like how Sean Marion used to be.
Fill up the stat sheet.
Right. He could fill up the stat sheet. In rotisserie leagues, he was a first-rounder this year. Do you go into this upcoming season thinking that he can get back to the scoring that he used to do and everything? The blocks are going to be there, but you know what? Actually, the blocks dipped a little bit.
Yeah, his blocks and his steals declined as well. And, you know, I still think he's going to be an elite player. You know, and listen, he did have an ankle injury that sort of limited his playmaking ability in terms of his athleticism, because he does rely on his leaping ability because he's one of the best jumpers in the league. I think he'll be fine. You know,
Do you take him in the first round?
I don't take him in the first round of any league.
No.
I still think he's dropped a little bit. Now he's on the cusp of being a one or a two in terms of the number one forward or number two forward. He's a second-round guy, in my opinion, in roto leagues. He's a third-round guy in head-to-head leagues. Definitely a guy that you can say, if you take, let's say, a Dirk or a Stoudemire, you know, he's your number two forward, you're going to be very happy with that type of production. So, he's still going to be right there, you know. And again, I think a lot will depend on what happens with Marvin Williams, with their point guard situation, and their coaching situation. You know, I think that Atlanta is going to be one of those teams that, even though they reach the second round, not necessarily a lock to be bringing back the same type of team.
Right.
The Dallas Mavericks, I don't know what to make of them next year. I mean, Dirk again, I think still is an elite talent, going to be a top 6 or 7 fantasy pick overall. He'll give you 25-plus points. He'll give you around 10 rebounds. And, again, entering that contract year could give him a little extra motivation, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of those guys that signs an extension prior to. Jason Kidd, we're seeing him, you know, fade before our eyes. He's still a good floor general, but not exactly a great fantasy option.
He can't crack double figures in scoring anymore.
Yeah, his assists were still around 8 or 9 per game. His rebounds were around 6 or 7. You know, those are typical numbers for him, but he's only averaging around 7 or 8 points per game. So, Still a good roto option, but not necessarily a great head-to-head player. Jason Terry, you know, he's going to score. He doesn't do much else. Josh Howard's going to score. He gives you a few rebounds.
The sleeper here is J.J. Barrera.
I was also going to say Brandon Bass. You know, I think, you know, you're starting to see, especially when they go to their, you know, closing lineup where it's Bass ahead of Dampier. Now, Bass, I believe, is a restricted free agent, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're we checked this.
And you're seeing, you know, sort of the maturation of a player, and he certainly has taken the next step in his career and had a good postseason, you know. So, you know, he's somebody I think you could target as sort of saying, you know, maybe a little bit type of extra production. Denver, is there anybody? I mean, Chauncey's, I think, is sort of gotten back to being.
I think what we see from Denver this year is that they're finally trusting J.R. Smith, who for some reason, J.R. Smith, he's been in everybody's doghouse since back when he was in New Orleans.
Yes.
Carl has made it no secret that he didn't like J.R. Smith, mm-hmm. and he tried to get rid of him. Now J.R. Smith is clicking. I think next year, with that kind of confidence that he's got some points in the George Carl bank right now.
But what does J.R. Smith give you?
He gives you scoring.
And three-pointers.
And he does. I mean, he's not a horrible rebounder for a guard. I mean, he can get you. You're not going to get 5 and 5 in terms of rebounds and assists.
Sure.
But you'll get useful numbers to go with the kind of scoring. And what you're going to get from J.R. Smith is value next year, because he's not going to be – you might get him once your starting lineup is already set. And you'll be able to plug in a player who can get you maybe like – he can average 15 points per game.
Yeah, but he's the type of guy, I think, that you just sort of – you leave on the waiver wire, and if you need points or you need
– Absolutely.
He's a better roto player, I think, than he is a head-to-head
yes,
player.
Yes, yes. But he has some sleeper value, I think.
Yeah.
For late, you're not going to draft him as a starter, but I think that you're going to use him more often than not once you do draft him.
Bass is an unrestricted free agent, so we'll see where he ends up in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Houston, I think Aaron Brooks has really taken the next step.
Absolutely.
You know, he, to me, is a better version of Lou Williams. Mm-hmm. Lou Williams is a guy that just scores, doesn't do very much else. Aaron Brooks, every time during the regular season I saw him on the court, all he did was score.
Yep.
And now you have him in the playoffs, and all he does is score, and now he's making plays for other people and just playing well above his 4'9" frame. You know, I know he's taller than that, but that's he looks about, you know, as big as you or I. he's taken, you know, he's become a guy worth drafting,
yes.
Especially if he enters next year as the starting point guard for Houston. That'll even elevate his game. And if Tracy McGrady's not ready, I think that makes him even higher. You know, I think he goes from undraftable to a number three fantasy guard, in my opinion, in head-to-head formats, because he's a guy that can give you 15, 20 points a game, 3 to 4 assists, and he's not going to hurt you with a lot of turnovers.
What does scare me about Brooks, and I do agree, I think he's the guy in the future. When they made the trade to get rid of Alston, the guy the general manager of
Daryl Morey.
Morey, he said he really liked, he thought the future of the point guard position in Houston was going to be Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, the guy that they acquired in the trade.
And for some reason, I don't think they're going to back off of that. I think they're going to try to figure it out on the floor next year.
Yeah.
And that's something that could take away from Brooks in the long term. But I do think that Brooks, in my opinion, I agree with you. I think Brooks is the better player.
And he's not a natural point guard.
He's not a natural point guard, but they're going to need Tracy McGrady not being around. He might not be around for the beginning of next season.
Sure.
They're going to need one of those hybrid combo one and two guards they'll get him his minutes.
Well, it'll also depend on Ron Artest as a free agent also, so we'll see what happens there in terms of where they do with him, what they do with Battier and sort of McGrady, and that will factor into it. But if he's a starting point guard from day one, I like him a lot.
Right.
Now, Yao Ming has a broken foot. Yao Ming is another guy that may not be ready next. Well,
he has a hairline fracture.
Let's look at Yao Ming and let's look at Tracy McGrady.
Okay.
Yao Ming, you just tweaked the rankings today a little bit. You say he's still a top five
yes.
center.
Yes.
So we're saying, and I'll pull it up just to have it in front of me, but we're saying that Dwight Howard is one.
Yes.
Two is?
Al Jefferson,
even though he's coming off of a torn ACL.
Yes.
Okay. Paul Gasol is three.
Yes.
Yao Ming is four.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Randolph is five.
Yes.
I'm scared of the center position.
It is. It's. I mean,
I almost don't. I'll tell you what. I almost don't want Al Jefferson. I don't want Yao Ming. I don't know if I still am able to, even after all these years, trust Zach Randolph.
You can't.
Mehmet Okur to me is solid, but he's not spectacular.
What happens with David Lee?
What happens with David Lee is going to be a big factor because he's a restricted free agent. If he comes back to the Knicks and he's still the Knicks guy, I almost say he's the third best center behind Howard and Gasol.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yes. There's just too much uncertainty right now.
We don't know what's going to happen with Andrew Bogut and his back problem, if he still needs surgery or not. Andrew Bynum is proving to be, as days go past, injury riddled and a bust.
Mm-hmm.
Do you trust Troy Murphy?
Under the same circumstances, I do. I think Indiana is going to be a little bit different.
Are they?
Well, they're building the team around Danny Granger, and they have a lot of guard depth now that they didn't know they had. Troy Murphy, he's
the only big man they got.
What's that?
He's the only big man they got.
Yeah.
At this point. I mean, Jeff Foster is.
Well, they have the Georgetown kid.
But
he's not ready. Sure. And they have Rosho and whatever.
Foster.
Yeah. They actually do have a lot of parts that.
But he's the only guy that can get them points.
Yes, I agree. And he's a lock to get you 10, maybe even 11 rebounds per year.
Broke the franchise record for double doubles this season.
Dunleavy's not going to be ready next year.
No.
Which is going to help.
But Dunleavy's a small forward.
No, I know, but when it was Dunleavy and Granger, they were going to build around Dunleavy and Granger.
But now it's Granger and Brandon Rush.
Right. So, no, you're right. Troy Murphy's...
To me, he's another guy that, like a Rondo, you don't
he's
take
a quiet,
too high.
Right. He's a quiet, safe pick.
Do you trust Andres Biedris?
I don't trust anybody in Golden State. No, fantasy owners know not to trust Nelson.
That's for a later show.
Yeah.
Al Harrington, do you trust him? Restricted free agent.
He used to know Don Nelson, so I don't trust him. Al Harrington, he's a guy that's not, you're not going to, he's not a plug-and-play center the way that Yao Ming is when he's healthy, that you're just going to plug him into the lineup you know you're going to get in a head-to-head league, 100 points, don't even worry about it. 1 week is going to get you 120, 1 week is going to get you 80. But Harrington, if you get him for the right value, I think he's still a number one center.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I think we have him ranked 12th. So he's actually in a 12-team league. He's the last number one center as we're counting right now. There are safer picks out there, but depending on what you do in your first couple of rounds, I think Al Harrington is a very viable fantasy center.
We won't get into the rest of this right now, but going from this, Okafor is 13, Horford's 14. Nene 15, Bargnani 16, Brook Lopez, who's a guy I think a lot of people would like, is 17, Gasol 18, Haas 19, Shaq is still hanging around at 20, Kevin Love 21, Millsap 22, Tyson Chandler 23, and Zydrunas Ilgauskas 24. You'll notice we did not mention Amari Stoudemire. He is no longer center eligible. He is strictly a forward. So getting back to the original point of Yao Ming, this is now four consecutive seasons where he's had an injury ruin the end of his year. Now, granted, each time the injury keeps getting pushed back and back and back, where you're getting more and more games from him. But this is still something that his 7'6" frame, for some reason, especially the lower part of his body, tends to break down as he plays more games. Granted, this coming off season, he's not going to have as much of a responsibility with the Olympics. He also is, you know, not having the stress of this continued playoff run now. But Yao Ming, when healthy, is arguably the best center in fantasy basketball, better than Dwight Howard because he scores more, his rebounding
free throws
is almost the same, he gives you better free throw percentage. You're looking at, and I'll preface this with a question of my own for my own fantasy league. I know I'm picking sixth in my keeper league next year. So the top five guys, I think, in every fantasy league are a lock.
Yes.
It's LeBron James, one. Some form of Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, and Dwight Howard, 2 through 5.
Right.
Then comes the question of at what point do you take guys like Yao Ming, guys like Amari Stoudemire, who's also coming back from eye surgery, guys like Dirk Nowitzki, who, you know, for most part I think is the safe pick at 6 overall. But we'll talk Yao. At what point do you say I could take Yao here and be comfortable with it? Is it 6? Is it 10? Is it 12? Is it the second round?
I don't think we've crossed the point where it's no longer possible to take Yao and be comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're taking Yao, then you're setting yourself up to the rest of the draft, make sure you're ready to go without Yao. Because Yao is not going to, at any point of the season, it could happen in the first month of the season, hairline fracture here.
Sure.
Any point of the season, you could be without Yao. And that's not exactly the way you want to build a championship fantasy team. You kind of, the thing you want to do is get as many safe picks as you can. Where you know what you're going to get.
But again, Yao played, I think it was
77 games this year.
77 games. So yeah. In 77 games, he put up, what, 20 plus points?
20 and
13?
13. 20. It was actually 20 and 9.9 this year.
Wow. His rebound is down.
And his rebound
19.7, 9.9 rebound.
He's not even a 20 and 10 center anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still, he could easily come back next year and put down 21 and 12. Well, sure. Not 12, but 10 or 11 with two blocks per game.
Well, here's his stats going back. He's 2008-2009, which was last year, 19.7 and 9.9. Year before that, he was 22.0 and 10.8. Year before that, he was 25 and 9.4. So he's always been right around 10 rebounds per game. He's never been a dominant rebounder in right. terms of his average for the season.
And Scola being there.
Yeah, Scola has really hurt him.
Right.
He's also been above 20 points or around 20 points the last 4 years.
This is the first time since 2004, 2005 that he failed to crack 20 points per
yes.
game.
Yes. And prior to those years, his first 3 years in the league, 82, 82, 80 games. Then 57, 48, 55, 77. If you get 77 games from Yao Ming, he's a first round pick.
Oh, sign up.
If you get 55 games from Yao Ming, I think we're talking about a second round guy. I think he's back to being a 70-plus per game guy, even with this latest injury. Because
yeah, I actually don't think this is a major. It's a hairline fracture.
But again, there's a pattern. If it was
yes,
a 77-game season and a hairline fracture,
right.
If this was 2005-06 when he had the first major injury when he played only 57 games, and then you're saying, okay, no worries, and then he plays 48 games, and then you say, okay, you know, where do I roll the dice? And then 55 right. games, and now you're like, you know, I have to change my underwear. And then it's 77 games. And a hairline fracture, okay, he sort of has built back a little bit of goodwill that he can be a healthy, productive fantasy center again. But, you know, this team, it's interesting. You know, you bring up Daryl Morey's name. They're almost sometimes better addition by subtraction. You know, they built this yeah. team around
Tracy and
no, they built it around Yao Ming. This
right.
this year's team was built around Yao Ming with
sure.
the parts that they put in place. So he's not going anywhere. But if McGrady comes back healthy, and then you have all these guys come back, let's say they bring back Artest, and Aaron Brooks is still there and has developed into now a quality scorer. Luis Scola has proven to be a double-double threat. So now you have all these productive pieces in place.
What do you do?
Maybe you're starting to see the decline of Yao Ming because of his 19.7, which is the first time, again, as you mentioned, under 20 points since the 04-05 season. And we're seeing him under 10 rebounds for the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th time in 7 years. So is the production starting to decline even though he played more games? I mean, you know, that's something to sort of take into consideration.
I think the other thing that you have to take into consideration is what you were saying when you were looking at the center rankings. It doesn't look too good out there.
That's true.
Do you want to wait, play it safe, and go guard and forward early and then come back for the likes of Al Horford or Nene or Brook Lopez?
Sure.
But I think you almost have to, at some point, late in round one, early in round two, Yao Ming staring you in the face, what do you do?
I think if he's there in round two, it's a no-brainer.
Yes, absolutely.
Any point in round two. If it's pick 13 in a 12-man league, you take him pick 13. Right. If it's 14 through 16, lock. If it's anything after that, you should, you know, do cartwheels in your draft room.
So in hindsight, it's going to be more of a thing where you don't choose Yao Ming, Yao Ming's going to choose you.
Yes.
If he falls to you, you're taking Yao Ming, and then you just have to know that.
Sure, especially when, again, you talk about the fact that there's no Amari Stoudemire in the center rankings anymore. There's a lot of question marks with guys like Jefferson, with guys like Randolph, with Lee's free agent status and Harrington's free agent status. And
right.
Murphy, you know, can he do it again? And Bynum, what's the deal with him? And Bogut with his back problem. So you're almost better off, like you said. You know, you take Yao Ming and then you sort of back yourself up with guys like a Jermaine O'Neal, a Kendrick Perkins, you know, even to a lesser extent, you take some late round chances on guys like Anderson Varejao and the Matt Bonners of the world. You know, these type of players who, you know,
Lopez's and the Marc Gasols, I think, are going to be interesting next year, where you can get them in the
middle rounds. Yeah, but the thing with those type of players, I think Lopez you'll see taken probably earlier than he should, and he'll still continue to produce at the level that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the type of players I think if you build your team the way you said, you take forward, guard, and let's say even your first three or four rounds are like that, and you go, let's say in the first round you go a guy like a Kevin Durant who's emerged as a first round pick, mm-hmm. and then you back that up, let's say in round two with maybe that's a little too high, but a Ben Gordon or a Steven Jackson if he's there in round two, you know, an Iguodala,
right?
Round two. And then round three, maybe you're starting to consider center. You don't really want to pull the trigger, so Chauncey Billups is there. You take Chauncey Billups. And now you have two good players or three good players at one spot. Then maybe you say, okay, time to pull the trigger on a center, and Brooke Lopez is there. You're not going to be disappointed with a Lopez. But I would say if that happens, make sure the next round go back and get a Spencer Hawes or get a Shaq or get a...
You're going to have to double up on centers.
Yeah, it's almost like you take them in back-to-back rounds and sort of say, okay, I'll take my chances. You know, I tried to do that this year in that one league we did with Alex Reithmiller, where I took Andrew Bynum and Greg Oden.
And tell them how you did in that league.
I finished second.
There you go.
Right, I finished second? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I lost to Michael Kadire, a baseball player from the Minnesota Twins.
Dropping names.
In any event, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Yao coming off of the injury and with McGrady. Do you draft McGrady at any point to take
Nope.
You don't touch him at all?
I don't touch Tracy McGrady.
So if you're sitting there with your second to last pick or your last pick, you don't take Tracy McGrady to sit on your bench?
I don't know if you remember this. We had this discussion when you took Tracy McGrady. I forget in which league this year.
It was our keeper league.
Was it the keeper league? Mm-hmm. I told you to stay away from him. I know you – it wasn't a matter of you were
– And the 30 deep.
And in the 30. Yeah, you had him twice. It wasn't a matter of you trying to go after Tracy McGrady.
He fell to me.
He fell to you, and you just couldn't resist.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. And it's something to do that with Yao. It's something to do with I can't think.
But
of
but last year was sort of the same situation. You sort of have to let him fall to you, and that's where you take a player of that caliber.
Sure.
Because if he's healthy, you're going to get close to 20 points. You're going to get.
He's never healthy.
Agreed. But
he's
now you're talking healthy. About microfracture surgery, which should correct the problem.
But that's a year. That's a year before he's back to
it. Not as much anymore. Listen, we saw Amari Stoudemire come back and sort of get back to that level, and I know we're talking about a much younger player in terms of production, but I still think if McGrady's there at the end of your draft, even if he's not going to be ready until January.
End of draft being what?
End of draft being sometime round 10 or later.
So round 10, you're still setting your starting lineup in a standard league.
I think you have to take him before you even finish your starting lineup.
I wouldn't.
Absolutely.
I can see the case. I see your point.
I'm not disagreeing with you that it's a bad thing. I think it depends on if you've been burned before. No, I've been burned twice.
Yeah,
by
you
him.
Were burned. Exactly.
But I still would roll the dice because if healthy, it's like same thing, not to get off track with basketball, but in football drafts, I'm taking Plaxico Burress in every draft I can right now. Because if in fact he does get signed and the legal problems are done, you don't get that type of production from a Laurent Robinson or a Michael Clayton or a Mark Clayton. Or a Ted Ginn Jr. even, those type of players that you don't know what you're going to get. If Plaxico Burress plays 6, 7, 8 games, you're not getting that type of production from those type of players.
Plaxico's a little bit of a different case because with him you're talking suspension and you're not talking.
But again, I'm talking.
You know, there is a quantifiable, once we know what the suspension is, a quantifiable total to expect from him.
Okay, going back to McGrady, and I'll take it a step further. Gilbert Arenas. If you knew that Gilbert Arenas was going to play for 3 weeks, which or going into the draft, we were hearing December. December he's going to come back, and December on. If you knew you were going to get Gilbert Arenas from December on, it's worth a draft pick.
But, and this is where, again, we had this discussion, because Jamie, you could tell he's a risk taker.
In my opinion, once I get quality players at the majority of my starting spots, I know I can get late round steals.
No, absolutely. Jamie's a smart risk taker. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not going to take Gilbert Arenas and then continue to take risks.
But at the same time, Jamie's the kind of guy. He took Monta Ellis this year.
Yes.
He took.
Which paid off.
Monta Ellis absolutely did. Gilbert Arenas.
Which did not pay off.
Which did not pay off. Tracy McGrady. And there might have been somebody else who took a risk. If there was a guy to take
Ginobili.
A risk.
Ginobili.
And Ginobili.
Yes.
If there was a guy to take a risk on, Jamie's the guy.
Not all in the same draft.
I wouldn't
do this in the same league. But I will say this. In the league where I took Tracy McGrady and Monta Ellis, I made the finals and I lost.
Right.
In the league where I took Ginobili and Gilbert Arenas, I made the finals and I lost.
Right.
Now, obviously, it's not exactly to say I'm winning championships based on these teams.
Hey, it's getting
but
there. Fantasy owners know. It's getting there.
It's taking. Now, I will say this. The amount of time that I had Ginobili when he was healthy, he was among the top 20 fantasy guards in the league. You
Absolutely.
Weren't going to find 30 guys better than him.
Right.
When Monta Ellis was playing at the level he was capable of playing at, which we saw for a brief period of time, he was among the best guys out there. And I think, you know, I wish I had an example of somebody who, in years past,
took a gamble on.
Not necessarily me, but just in general, where a guy wasn't ready to start the year or wasn't expected to be healthy for a full season based on the previous year, and he came back and was just absolutely ridiculous. And maybe a good example this year was Dwayne Wade.
I was going to say
because a lot of people were scared of Dwayne Wade after the last 2 years with the shoulder problem and with the knee problem. And he comes back this year and he finishes as the number one guard in head-to-head league. So,
but
if you roll the dice on those, and I understand Dwayne was healthy and we saw in the Olympics that he was back to the player that we expected him to be. So that sort of helped his draft status. But I still think if you were sitting there, the same thing you said about Yao Ming, if you're sitting there at the end of round one and you don't pick him, he picks you. The same thing if you're sitting there in the middle of your draft and Tracy McGrady's there. And again, we're talking about this in May.
See, now you're saying middle.
Well, I'm saying like round 10, round 10 of a 15-16 round draft. You're sitting there in round 10 or later, and McGrady's there. And I'll extend it to Gilbert Arenas and Manu Ginobili as well, guys who did not finish the year healthy and are banged up and, you know, questionable injury guys going back throughout the course of their last few years. Elton Brand's a little different because he didn't look good playing with his new team.
Right.
So we can talk about him in a second. But I think you look at these guys, I'll throw Jameer Nelson in there as well with the shoulder problem. These are the type of players that you got to be happy with your first 8, 9, 10, 11, 12
absolutely.
Picks. And then you say, you know what? I can't pass up the chance that he's going to be there. And don't forget, if you're in leagues where you have injured reserve spots, that's a great thing to do because you could stash them and you get an extra player. So if there's a guy, you're doing a 16-round draft or a 20-round draft in round 21, there's a guy you really wanted, you could go out and pick him up right away. So these are the type of things, you know, you can get an Aaron Brooks late. You can get, I'm trying to think of somebody else we mentioned, an Aaron Brooks,
sleeper guards,
a Brandon Bass, a player who can, you know, who you liked really in the playoffs, and you say, well, maybe I think he can be something. Okay, I'll roll the dice and I'll take a chance on him, picking him up as the first pick off the waiver wire. So that's the type of player I think you sort of target and look at. Look, you're not talking about holding on to these guys in keeper leagues anymore.
No.
You don't hold Gilbert Arenas. You don't hold Manu Ginobili. You don't hold Tracy McGrady, certainly. You dump Mike Dunleavy. And that's the other point. If you know the guys are going to be hurt, if we know McGrady's not going to be ready until February.
They're talking about questionable for the start of the season.
Yeah, but if he says I'll be back in January,
that means he'll be back in March.
I roll the dice and I take Tracy McGrady.
Sure. It's about doing your research. It's about following our updates on CBSSports.com.
Sure.
There's varying degrees of risk. And there's taking a risk on Tracy McGrady, who we're talking about 4 or 5 straight years of this. There's taking a risk on Yao Ming, who took a step back in the right direction. There's taking a risk on Jameer Nelson, who has... It's a case-by-case situation.
Sure.
I think you have to...
And again, you're not going to want to take all of these guys. You take one.
Take one,
maybe
team.
Two, depending on how deep your league is and how many rounds you go in your draft. But you take one of these guys, and again, you take it after you sort of fill out your draft, fill out your team with your draft, you know, and you're comfortable with the way all these guys are going to look and sort of, okay, if I have 4 guard spots where I only start 3, maybe my 5th guard is Tracy McGrady, or maybe my 6th guard is Tracy McGrady.
I completely agree.
You know, that's the type of thing you do. All right, we'll get more into this fantasy stuff as we go along here throughout the playoffs. You can email us, dmfantasybasketball@cbs.com. I think it's the first time I've said that. dmfantasybasketball@cbs.com. You can check out all the things we do fantasy basketball-wise and also fantasy football, fantasy baseball, fantasy hockey, fantasy golf, where Ross Devenport is another award-winning fantasy writer. Fantasy NASCAR, you can find that all at CBSSports.com and fantasynews.cbsports.com. Again, that's CBSSports.com. And fantasynews.cbsports.com. Sergio will be cranking up some of his off-season basketball stuff on a minute-by-minute basis. I just did a free agent impact on all the free agents this off-season, and you can check out where we think they're going to land. Make sure you read Ken Berger on our NBA coverage. If you haven't checked it out yet, you're missing tremendous, tremendous work as he goes along throughout the playoffs, following all of these things from Kenyon Martin's mother and Mark Cuban yelling at her to the father of the young boy who was pushed by Glenn Big Baby Davis. We will certainly get into that as we go along throughout the rest of these playoffs. For Sergio Gonzalez, I'm Jamie Eisenberg. Thanks for listening. And again, you can check us out on iTunes as well as well as listening to us on the site. So again, cbsports.com and fantasynews.cbsports.com. Thanks a lot.